this was my identity.
Nobody talks about how freaking hard it is to be a dentist. What most people talk about is how this affects the patient. What nobody talks about is how this affects us. Dentistry is ready for this. Now is really the time.
Welcome to Wellness in Dentistry. I am your co-host, Dr. Martin Mendelson. I am a disabled dentist, coach, speaker, thought leader, and author. And I'm joined by my dear friend and co-host, Dr. Kyle Stanley, who is a dentist, tech entrepreneur, speaker, and researcher. And together, we've proudly helped thousands of dental professionals pursue wellness in dentistry. If you're unfamiliar with us, we recommend that you check out our respective links, websites, and course offerings. And speaking of which, if you like what you hear, we'd love to hang out with you in Irvine, California at Glidewell Laboratory for our Lightside Live course, May 9th and 10th of 2025. Can't believe I'm saying that. It's a transformational course. We're so grateful for Glidewell for opening up their doors to us. So we hope we will see you there. And so today we're going to discuss all things around our identity, dentist identity, identity as professionals, and how that connects or not connects to us as people. So what do you think about that, Kyle?
Martin, this is something that I struggled with for so long. It's something that I think I still struggle with. It's something that pulls me back, and that is this idea of separating my purpose from my profession.
Yeah.
I think this is not just a dental problem. However, I think it's worse in dentistry than in the general public. So what I mean by that is you may have someone who's a teacher or a plumber or a construction worker, and they do identify their self-worth and who they are. And when you meet them at a barbecue, they say, oh, I'm a teacher, right?
Yep.
But I think in dentistry, and I think in medicine in general too, is we really align our clinical work, our clinical prowess with our self-worth.
Yep.
So it's like with the idea of identity today, we're also talking about self-worth and how we think about our self-worth.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, we've talked about this before, our respective backgrounds. And, you know, you and I both had our identities ripped away from us for different reasons. With me, you know, my right hand, my dominant hand, stopped cooperating, shall you say. And I became disabled. And it took me so many years to really look at myself with worth and value, just as Martin. Because even at dental events, you know, the worst thing that would happen until I had a different mindset around it was people would say, where do you practice? And then I'd have to say, well, I don't because I'm disabled, et cetera, et cetera. And I realized later through therapy, what I went through was trauma, like defined trauma. And I actually also write about in my book where, you know, during my tenure at Spear, for many years, I was the MC of the seminars, and I had, forget about loud, let's say screaming, deafening imposter syndrome as I'm standing up there with Dr. Spear asking questions that colleagues wrote that I was eminently qualified to ask, but yet was screaming inside, like, who am I to be up here? And so, yeah, I have real firsthand knowledge with this stuff.
It's funny that you say that about not practicing, because, you know, once I started lecturing more, once I started my AI company, Pearl, you know, I did scale back on my clinical days. And I remember when that first started, kind of not feeling like a real dentist, right?
Well, you know what's really interesting about that? I don't think I've ever told you this, but you know, we both go to respective meetings all the time. I just came back from the Seattle Study Club Symposium where I was honored to lecture there. Thanks, Seattle Study Club. And, you know, people would find out, you know, that not only know each other, we're good friends, we have this podcast. And it's interesting. They'll ask me, they're like, oh, does he practice much anymore? Mm-hmm. And isn't that interesting? Like, why would that be a question? Now, you could argue that's a natural question because we're all trained predominantly, initially, primarily as clinicians, right? So it's a reasonable question, but what's behind the question, I think, would be an interesting follow-up to that. What do you think?
Well, you know what's funny is I was always, because, I don't know if people know this, but I officially stopped practicing this year. Okay, it was my official not practicing, as I've transitioned out of clinical dentistry, not on purpose, actually, it just kind of happened. And what's funny is when I now tell, I'm kind of scared sometimes still to tell people because they say, oh, you're still practicing. And now I say, no, I stopped officially practicing this year. And they're always like, wow, that's so awesome. Congrats. Like, what a dream. Amazing. So it's like, I think that they're going to say, oh, well, what, you must not know what you're talking about anymore. You don't know what it's like. But it's all been positive. So it's like so much of that is in my head.
Oh, 100%.
And that is that, going back to that identity, that is how we, it's all in our head. But we need to go through the process. And just like Martin and I talk about, everything is a skill. You may have heard us say this many times, right? Learning how to set boundaries is a skill. Learning how to change your mindset is a skill,
Oh,
just like how it is
absolutely.
to prep a crown. Changing your identity and understanding your self-worth is a skill that is practiced and eventually you get better at. And I'll tell you, I've gotten better at it. I'm not fully there. Like I said, I will probably always struggle with this, but I am fully there. And so I teach this in my course, but one of the things with dentistry is you're one identity shift away from the freedom you've always wanted in dentistry. Many dentists feel like they're trapped in some way in dentistry. And I think if you can shift your identity, you can instantly get freedom from dentistry. And I'm not saying freedom like you're not practicing anymore, or you're not a practice owner, or you don't have to be an associate anymore, or whatever. But that the mental chains that are holding you inside.
I love that you just said that because you just made me think of something. So at the symposium, I went to one of the breakouts to support my friend Kirti, who was there talking about CAD/CAM restoration, specifically color, which I used to lecture on. So of course I
That's
was
right.
interested.
Yeah, Avita, right?
And so she was talking all about the steps she takes and how she approaches these cases and how she color maps them. And she said so many times, this is a really fun case. And it made me think about the approach of, oh my gosh, I get to have fun versus, oh my gosh, this is a challenge. What if they don't like it? What if the color doesn't match, et cetera, et cetera. And so it becomes a choice of which thought process you want to engage in. And I had so much fun listening to her because, first of all, I was proud of my friend, but second of all, I was, jonesing out on the color stuff because I love that stuff so much. And then second of all, I was jonesing on the mindset shift that she was having because so many people get, quote, scared of these kind of cases in whatever way you want to define that, where she was like, I love these. These are so fun. I get to, and how many times can we shift that perspective? Like you said, you're one thought away to look at it A versus B, right? It's just really interesting to me.
I mean, the longer I've been on my personal growth journey, the more I realize just how big a mindset shift can be, but also how much work it can be and how much, time and effort and maybe even money you have to put into this to make something happen. But this idea for me of my identity not being aligned with my profession was so challenging because our whole, we spend more time at our practices than we do with our families. We spent 8 to 12, 16 years in residency and school and dental school and college, all getting to this point. So it's almost like in dentistry and maybe even other jobs where you have to go to a very, 8 plus years of schooling, it kind of funnels you into this identity. So over time, maybe when you start college, you're like, I'm not a dental student, so I'm just like a fun person or whoever I was in high school, right? And then the last year or two, you're thinking like, I'm going to dental school, so I'm like a future dental student. I'm a pre-dent, and so that's already starting it. And then you get in, hopefully, and then you're like, wow, this is expensive. This is time consuming. This is challenging. I need to spend all of my waking hours on this. And I'm going to be there on Saturdays doing wax ups. And I'm going to go to night clinic. And I'm going to look at PubMed and read research articles. And they're offering free CE for the students. So I'm going to go on Sunday and do that too. And so you're slowly getting funneled in. It's almost like, I think of like a ranch. I've been watching a lot of Yellowstone recently. I think of like corralling cattle. It's like they're slowly corralling us in. And I think just when you think that identity funnel is over, it continues even more. Because then it's like, okay, now I'm a dentist, right? And I am a dentist. Now I'll always be a dentist. But now I'm a dentist who's an associate. And now I'm a dentist who's a practice owner. And now I'm a dentist who's a practice owner that has $1 million practice. And now I'm a periodontist. I'm a specialist. Or I'm a pediatric dentist. Or I'm a female doctor. And so much of that is incorporated into that. And I think it's also challenging because we do get rewarded for having the identity of being a doctor.
It's true, and there's a couple things that I've been thinking about as you were sharing all that stuff that we can talk about as tangible tools and tangible ways to deal with this stuff. Because what you were talking about, which we've mentioned on previous episodes, is this whole idea of like hedonic adaptation, or what was the way you had a different term for it?
No,
But
hedonic adaptation was it? Yeah.
yeah, it's the concept that we're looking toward the next thing, which is what you were talking about, associateship, partnership, practice, etc. And they've done research on this with lottery winners, where you win the lottery, you're happy for a very short period of time, then you go back to your baseline of happiness or contentment, whatever that is for you. So part of this, as Sean Accord talks about in the happiness advantages, you got to be really careful with that stuff, because if you keep looking toward a given goalpost, when you hit it, then in his words, quote, the goalposts keep changing. So we need to be focusing on the practice journey. Notice they call practice not destination dentistry, right?
Yeah, right.
We have to be focusing on the journey of our practice life in all of its incarnations, business, clinical, leadership, etc., so that we can be in a place that we don't get sucked into the growth versus fixed mindset paradigm, where I'm a successful dentist because, or I'm a success because my finances are here. I'm a success because I'm doing this kind of work. It's like, no, you're a success because you're on a journey to create this kind of practice. And for those that are new to this concept, that may sound semantical. But then if we flip it, where something doesn't go well or you have a bad month, I'm a failure because I didn't meet goal this month. No. I failed to meet goal. What can I do differently next month, having learned what happened this month, to do differently? So that's where all this stuff starts to come together and coalesce relative to our mindset and our identity and how we feel about ourselves.
Yeah, well, one thing that you said at the end there that is really one of the big reasons why you and I talk about identity so much is because of the bad things that come with aligning your purpose with your profession, especially in a profession where you're bound to have failures. I mean, let's be honest. You practice long enough, a crown's gonna break. A tooth that you prepped, a tiny little filling, is going to turn into a root canal. An implant that you place is going to fail. It's not going to integrate. A denture is going to break. The patient's going to come back with 11 different post-ops on a denture with sore spots, right? I mean, it's going to happen. And if you align your whole self-worth and what you're proud of in yourself with this clinical prowess, I'm telling you, it's going to be bad. You're going to say, I'm a loser. What the hell is my problem? I went to school for, 10 years to do this, and I've been practicing for 10 years. I mean, I've been doing this for 20 years. I can't make a freaking denture. I can't prep a tooth right.
Oh
I
my
mean, God,
gosh.
I've been doing this for so long.
So I do a lot of one-on-one executive coaching with dentists in particular, and this comes up more often than not. And it usually ends up coming around to almost this exact statement every time. You know, I should be better, or this should be easier. And my response to them is always, really, should it? Tell me about why it should be easier. Well, blah, 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 blah. Well, how is that not an expectation? What other kinds of things can happen? I mean, if those who have heard me lecture, I almost give this stat every single time. The National Science Foundation quotes research that states, you know, that we have upwards of, you know, 30 to 50,000 thoughts per day. 80% of those are negative, and 95% of those are repetitive. And so we focus on this, like, this should have been easier, it should have been easier, it should have been easier. And maybe that's one or two patients out of, let's say, 20 that you interacted with in some shape or form that day. So let's say it's two. Why are those 18 less important than the two?
So true.
And you know, it's again, if you're new to this stuff, it may sound fantastical and semantical, but it can change your life. Or and not but, and it can change and it can change your life when you really start to change your habitual thought patterns, which, by the way, is a skill, just like prepping a tooth or doing, you know, taking out a set of four wisdom teeth or placing an implant. You have to understand that skills of the mind are just as, or take just as much fortitude and consistency as skills of the hand. They just do. It's just a different body part. That's all.
Yeah, I made a few notes because this expression that I learned from you, how true is that? I used it a lot actually this last Sunday. So you and I were talking before, but I gave three lectures in the last week. You were busy lecturing at Seattle Study Club. You know, your co-hosts have been around recently. We've been getting around. But on Sunday, I was speaking for the Orange County Dental Society here in Southern California, and they had a wellness
That's so cool.
event,
That's
and
awesome.
it was so cool, by the way. It was free, first of all, even for non-members.
That's amazing.
You got breakfast, you got lunch, you got 2 hours of CE. I spoke. There were a few other shorter speakers. We did round tables. They had a yoga event where you could do yoga. They had a self-defense event where you could learn some jiu-jitsu. There were sponsors there. I mean, first of all, it was just an incredible event that I'm so hopeful that there will be more of these, and
That's
Orange
great.
County is really leading the charge with wellness. But we did roundtables, and there were some great questions that came to my roundtable, which was more around burnout. And there were things like there was one gentleman there who's a really nice guy. He's an orthodontist, and he said, "You know, I really am thinking about I'd like to reduce my hours, and but I don't think I can do that." And I said, "Why?" And he said, "Well, you know, people, they want certain days, or they want to come after school, or they don't want to take work off." And I used your line. My dad was sitting next to me, and I said, "You know, I'm going to use Martin's line." And I said, "How true is that?" And then you know, it made him think. And I also, we were talking about with him, you know, if he takes time off, I kind of said, "What may happen?" He said, "Well, patients may leave." And I said, "Okay. Do you need every single patient? You know, how true is that you need every single patient? Would you be happier, for example, if you weren't working this day or this specific hours you don't want to work and you lost 90K of production, let's say?" And I was telling them my story about how when I first started taking more time off and I made less money, I was actually happier
Oh,
because I was able to go
absolutely.
to the gym and I was able to go to my son's farm school class and I was able to be home by dinner and all this stuff. And so that how true is that just really resonated with a lot of people. There were some other stories I could tell that I was pushing back on. It's such a great way of saying that. Now, before you chime in, there were a few other things I wanted to say based on what you were talking about. You were talking about all of the negative thoughts that we have. And I think we need to remind ourselves that we're human and these negative thoughts are what keep us alive. You know, going back evolutionarily, right? You're made to notice the negative thoughts because is that a tiger in the bushes?
Yeah,
You know, is
totally.
that a snake that's going to kill me? Is that a rival tribe that doesn't like me and is going to try to take my children or something, right? So understanding that we're human and that is innate in us. However, also understanding that we do have the power to change our thoughts. And so
Well,
going back to what you were talking about with hedonic adaptation, I
yeah.
know Martin is chomping at the bit here. Going back to what you were talking about with hedonic adaptation, I think one of the greatest ways of understanding that this is a journey and being appreciative of the journey and not the destination is having that daily gratitude.
Oh yeah, 100%. And I love quoting one of my mentors, Karen Sullivan, where she talks about grace versus excuse. And so you're 100% right. Look, we're going to have these thoughts. And so the grace is realizing and acknowledging that they're there. The excuse is saying, I can't do anything about it.
Right, because I'm human and that's just how it is and that's how we're made, yeah.
And I love what you said about with the orthodontist about hours and stuff. And we keep telling ourselves this story. And I want to offer a different possible outcome. We keep telling ourselves a story that we have to do this because patients won't come. Well, do we all realize that our medical colleagues, like for example, I'm of the age, so I'm going for, one of those Roto-Rooter jobs in the near future. And they only do consults on a given day. They only do procedures on a given day. They only do follow-ups on a given day. And what
I
do we
gave
all
them this
do?
example, actually.
Yeah. What do we all do? We go, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And it drives me crazy. And so here's the thing that a lot of, because I've had this conversation, dentists potentially miss because you made the comment that he said he might lose patients. However, whom are you losing? You're losing the people that either can't modify their schedule or don't want to. So then, therefore, the people that end up filling the schedule want to be there.
That's so true.
How interesting is that? Because look, what I teach and what I do, not a lot of, well, let me rephrase. There's many dentists who don't get what I do. And I am 100% okay with that. You know why? Because the people I work with who value me are the ones that get it. And so
So
I would
true.
rather work with them all day long than somebody who doesn't get it. Period. End of story.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's so true. I gave that example. So those that have listened to this probably know that I had orthodontic surgery, gosh, almost 2 years ago,
That
actually,
was
which is
2 years ago already? Oh
crazy.
my
Yeah.
gosh.
And this is a dental colleague, although it was in a hospital, right?
Sure.
But they say your appointment is on
Exactly.
March 17th
Yeah.
at 8 a.m. You need to be there at 6:30 to check in.
Yeah.
Not which, oh, when would you like to come in?
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And again, I'll go back to what I said. And if you're going to balk at that because everybody else does it the way we've traditionally done it in dentistry, great. Then again, what are you doing? You're actually filtering the people that are more committed. Now, granted, there are some individuals that don't have control of their schedule. I don't want to seem
Right.
flippant or
Right.
disrespectful. But by the same token, that's not everybody.
Yeah.
I always talk about this in so many different ways where Dr. Spear always would say to the audiences, relative to mindset, although he didn't use this term, he would be like, is everybody not interested in comprehensive care? Or are
Right.
some people not interested? I love that because it's
Yeah.
so true.
Well,
Like,
going back to that story about the
yeah.
orthodontist, and just we can talk about anyone with this problem, or with this challenge, I would say, which is, a patient may leave, or a patient may not like me, and this may not work with them, or my practice is too expensive, or I don't take their insurance, or whatever. That's hard for anybody, right? Because we want to help people. We want to grow our business. We want to do great work. But I'll tell you, if you shift your identity away from aligning with your profession, it's much easier to dismiss patients or have people leave. Because listen, great dentists lose patients. I mean, amazing dentists lose patients because they didn't get along with the front office, or they didn't like how your parking is, or they didn't like your fees, or you could only see them on Friday mornings and they can't manage their schedule. They can't see you Friday mornings. So if you take it personally as I'm a loser, or I'm not good enough, or I should have had better customer service, and so that's why they left. That's you aligning your purpose in life or your identity in life with your profession. I'll tell you, once you make this mindset shift where you say, I love dentistry, I am passionate about dentistry, I'm good at dentistry, I put a lot of time into it, but it's my job. It's not who I am. It's much easier to have these challenges with patients.
You said something that totally perked my ears up about they're not gonna like me. And I had this huge epiphany. I think more personal than professional, but it works both. And let's see if it resonates with the listeners, where I would think the same thing. It's like, well, what if they don't like me? And then it hit me one day. I didn't come up with this. I saw this, but I really accepted it. I don't like everyone. So
I just saw something like this.
if
Yes.
I don't like everyone, why is it not okay for them not to like me? And when you truly accept that, it can, I know this is going to sound a little crazy, but it can be life-changing because all of a sudden you go, well, shoot, I don't like everybody. I guess it's okay that somebody didn't like me.
I can't remember if you told me this recently, but I just saw this, like, or heard it on a podcast or saw something on Instagram. And it totally opened my eyes too, which is so true. Like, hey, it's okay for people to not like me. I mean, that's hard because everyone wants to be liked.
Of
Everyone
course.
wants to be loved, everyone wants to be accepted. But once you realize that you can only control yourself and you can only do what you can do, you can only communicate better, show up better, be more prepared, look better. Show your knowledge, et cetera, build trust. After that, it's up to them.
Totally.
And
100%.
if you understand that and know you can't control people, you can only control yourself. And one of those important things is to control your identity. This is something that could really change how you think about practice, how you think about your home life.
The other thing that you said just a few moments ago that perked my interest was you made a statement of, recalling what might be going through someone's mind relative to I should be better clinically. And so my guidance to that would be this. Okay, should I be? In what ways can I be better? Specifically, in what ways are those things in my control? And of those things in my control, what can I do to increase my skill set? Because the opposite for things you can control and or improve is simply throwing your hands up and telling yourself a helpless story. As the authors of Crucial Conversations talk about, not every story is equal. They talk about victim, villain, and helpless stories. And for me, one of the worst is the helpless story, where you throw up your hands and go, there's nothing I can do, which then therefore you use to justify your behavior. If there's something you can do about it and you believe it's in your control, then the question then becomes, as your self-appointed coach, what are you going to do about it? And by when?
Yeah, there's a quote that I say in Lightside, which is something like, if you can control it. And if you can't, forget about it.
Let it go,
And that can relate back to clinical dentistry. So let's say you're like, gosh, every time I take that final X-ray of the implant, I don't always love the positioning. Sometimes it's a little too mesial, a little too distal, a little too apical, a little too coronal. Well, guess what? You can control that now. We have guided surgery where the implant will go in the exact position, up to like maybe 0.3 millimeters. And every time you take that X-ray, you just go, yeah, that's exactly where I planned it. And a lot of people think of that, doing this kind of treatment as I want to feel cool, I want to do what's newest, what's most predictable. I think about that selfishly as I want better mental health. I want to know that once when I do a treatment, I want to feel good about myself. I don't want to stress about, gosh, is that implant going to integrate? And when I do the crown, is there going to be a food trap on that? Am I going to have an open contact? Am I going to be able to do it screw retained because now it's too buccal? Little things like this. It's like I know a lot of dentists that suffer with how do I keep provisionals on with veneers, or I have veneers popping off. And it's like, listen, we now have the research and the proven science to say veneers will not come off. And it's all about understanding bonding systems. This is my partner, Matt Najat, is really a leader on this. I'll tell you, he doesn't have veneers come off. And I'm not saying that as like, oh, he's, superhuman. No, but he's taking the time. He's using rubber dam. He's going through all the steps that we need to know. Etching and priming and bonding and aerobrating and putting silane and all this stuff that we kind of know about, but maybe not all of us do it. And I was talking to Matt recently. I'm actually going to bring him on to do an interview for Lightside about how doing predictable dentistry reduces his stress.
Oh, 100%.
He teaches courses on biomimetic dentistry, and so many people come to him like, my fillings are always there. Patients are sensitive, so I have stress because of that, and my crowns are popping off. And how do you do veneer provisionals because they don't stay on? There's no retention, and all of it is learning some steps, just like how we're talking about with identity, learning some steps, changing your mindset, and if you can
Absolutely.
control it, control it. But
Absolutely.
there are things you can't control, like for example, let's keep it clinical. The patient's diet. You can't control that. Now, the patient can, but you can't control that. So, if they break something because they bit on an olive pit or a Jolly Rancher, let's say, that's not your fault. Going back to identity, you shouldn't see that as your failure.
Totally. I when I was a newbie dentist, I love this story so much. I prepped a crown on a lower molar, I think it was lower left, first molar, and placed a temporary on there. I wasn't doing same day at that point, and basically said to the guy, please be careful, nothing, chewy or crunchy, blah blah blah. Well, he comes in the next day. I practiced in Baltimore because he went to the O's game and he fractured the temporary on a peanut shell. And I said, and I made some kind of offhanded comment, something like, oh, I guess, did you forget about the crunchy stuff or something like that? It wasn't even that direct. It was, and he goes, oh, you didn't say anything about peanuts. He said that to me. And I'm like, how is peanuts not crunchy? Like,
But
help
you're
me.
supposed to say every
Yeah,
single
exactly.
iteration of
And
food that could cause this to break or come off.
luckily enough, I had the presence of mind enough to pause because my instinct, just as me as a person, would have been to chuckle. But I realized by his expression and his tone of voice and the way he was serious, he was like, oh, you didn't say anything about it. Like he was sincere and also in the dark at the same time. And I was like, oh my gosh, really? So
Well, and I think a lot of dentists would have that story and see that as something's wrong with me. Maybe my provisional wasn't good, or maybe my setting expectations on this. And maybe there is a lesson to be learned there, right? Did you, I'm not coming off as like blaming you, but did you, did you say it in passing? Did you
totally.
not put the emphasis that you could have on that? So take away, this guy did this. That has nothing to do with you. However, all you can control is what you do. So in this case, you could have thought about, and I'm sure you have, maybe I need to give examples, for example.
That's exactly right. And this goes back to the whole growth mindset thing, relative to, okay, so what can I do better next time? Right? And then if it still doesn't go well that next time, how did we improve? What happened time number two that was better than time number one? Because last time I checked, life's a journey, not a destination. And perfection is not a destination. That's like
a
that's somewhere
possibility.
out there, right? So, yeah.
That's a great topic before we maybe finish this off in a few minutes is perfection of dentistry with your identity. So from a clinical side, most of us want that perfect margin, that perfect bone level, that perfect shade, that perfect contact. But perfection is not achievable. And
No, and
excellence is achievable.
absolutely. And please stop looking at Instagram and other social medias, because comparison is the thief of joy. And for many, they're not posting their failures, you know? To use a different yet very related example, I love particularly men on the like on Instagram or whatever, there are fitness influencers that will literally post shots of themselves. They're like, this is what I really look like. This is what I look like with the right lighting. And I guess women as well, not only
Yeah, I've
physique
seen
wise,
some
but
of
even
women
playing with
doing
makeup
that.
and stuff, you know?
There's this great one that kind of went viral of this woman. I mean, she's really pretty. She's in a bikini and her hair's up and this and that and that. And then she goes, "This is what I really look like." And she shows, like, "Here's my cellulite, and here's what I did to change how my face looks, and this is what real lighting looks like." And,
There was that other woman that went super viral, very attractive woman that has is completely dentureless, and when she has no makeup on and her hair's not done, she literally looks like a different person. Like I there's
She had
and
dentures?
yes. And it went viral a couple, like super viral a couple years ago. And then she started doing these videos about the stepwise process of putting herself in that different aesthetic place. Holy smokes. It was like a different person. Aesthetically.
I think that's a great way to finish is if you are thinking your identity is set on your clinical work and you're comparing it to the people you follow that have big followings, know that they have complications. They have patients leaving their practice. They have turnover in their team. And now they may also have 10, 20 more years experience with you. I remember when I first got out of school, that was kind of right before Instagram started, so it was kind of more Facebook. But I would see people go, "Gosh, their cases are amazing. Oh, wow, their clinic is so beautiful. Oh, they're giving all these lectures. Oh, wait, they've been practicing for 15 years and I'm practicing for one."
And you know, I think this might be a really great example to kind of give toward the end, which is this. You and I are both on social media. You and I have very different levels of followers. You and I have had plenty of conversations of how frustrated I was with growth. And so I looked intelligently or more factually based on what the words are, relative to what is actually going on with my social media. And so then I took a chance and I did some research and I am working with an AI-based platform that goes out to help you organically grow your Instagram, and it's working. And so I think it's a lesson, because rather than getting frustrated that, you know, Kyle and I are good friends and we have this podcast and blah, 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 and you know, he's at 50,000 and I'm at like 700, I did something about it.
Yeah, that was all you could do, right?
And so I think it's a good lesson. It's like, stop comparing and getting frustrated. If you choose to do something about it, we'll do something about it. And it's working.
So how can we sum this up? I think we know identity in dentistry is important. We know that separating our identity from our clinical work and from our profession is an important step in anybody's journey. I think if this is the first time you're hearing about this, step one is done, which is awareness. Now, step two is going to be starting to implement some things and change your mindset. Now that you know, ooh, this is a problem. Yes, I do align my purpose in life with my clinical work or my profession. Now I need to know how to change it.
I think it's a twofold process. One would be a practice of gratitude on a daily basis. There's lots of research on this, that it ends up flipping your aperture to looking toward the things you're grateful for. The second thing is changing your thought patterns relative to, oof, I don't like what that looks like. Okay, well, I did the best I could at this point. What could I have done differently? Now, notice I didn't say better because that's a judgmental word. What can I do differently? And between those two, you can start to change the way your thoughts are positioned and processed. And over time, you will find yourself driving home thinking about, oh, all this stuff went great today. This wasn't so fun. I acknowledge it wasn't. And I'm going to do something differently next time to make it to potentially generate a different outcome. That's
Yeah,
the take home for me.
I think that's awesome. If you want to go through this process together with Martin and I, we do this identity shift in our Lightside Life course. So May 9th and 10th in Irvine, California, like Martin said, at Glidewell. You can go to wellnessanddentistry.com, click on our links, and you can find the link there. So sign up, join us. We've already got a bunch of people signed up from all
We
over the
do.
country.
We do.
And it's going to be a really fun time. Oh, and we have a yacht party. I didn't mention that. We're going on a
Yes.
120-foot yacht with
Yes.
basically beautiful dinner, drinks. So come and bring your spouse or your son or daughter or a neighbor or a friend, and you get a plus one on the yacht party, which is kind of fun. So you can go to lightsidedentistry.com, or you can go to wellnessanddentistry.com and find our links to sign up for that. And thanks for joining us. We'll see you on the next episode of Wellness and Dentistry.
See you soon.